Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. The greatest gift given to mankind is the gift of Iman, the gift of Deen. Minus this gift, then there is no direction in life. There is no direction, there is no meaning to life, and you can't understand what you are striving for. Just imagine an individual, he comes to a factory and he's moving from one end to the other end. Very swiftly he's moving one end to the other end the whole day. You ask him, but what's your position, bhai? What work are you doing? He can't give any type of an explanation that what's his position, what's his portfolio, why is he here. What would we tell him? Tell him, by you wasting your time. You get into a position and stick to that position, then we know that you are executing this work. So, Deen gives us that direction, that this is what you're supposed to be doing at any given time, any given moment of your life. This is what you are supposed to be doing, this is what is required of you. Right? Or look at a child that is lost in the Haram Sharif or at the airport. He's running from one end to the other end. He's lost. See? So, how pitiful do we feel over the child? Because he's got no sense of belonging. Who does he belong to? Who are his parents? He's got no sense of belonging. See? Running from one end, crying the other end, third end, going all around. But there's no sense of belonging. What a pitiful sight. So exactly is the person who doesn't have a deen. And that is why, in proportion to how much you don't have a deen, or you're not connecting to Allah Ta'ala, in proportion to how much you don't have deen, and you're not connecting to Allah Ta'ala, to that proportion you are lost. See? In proportion to how much you do have deen, and how much you are connecting to Allah Ta'ala, then you have a sense of belonging. You feel secure, you feel that I know what I am here for, you feel guarded, you feel protected, you have a direction. Right? So, this levels of depression that we have today, one of the more important reasons for this depression is, the individual doesn't have a sense of belonging. He doesn't know who he belongs to. He doesn't know who can he recline against, who must he refer to, in what situation, what must he go, what is his whole role in life, he doesn't know. So he's running from one end to the other end, but without any sense of belonging. He can't hold to something, he can't attach himself to anything, there is no affinity and no bond onto anything. And life is a heap of problems. It's a mountain of problems. I mean, the mountain of problems, you've got a mountain of problems, but you've got nobody to refer to. Nobody that you can hold on to firmly. Nobody that you can hold on to very, very strongly. Then, in proportion to how much you don't have deen, you don't have to be an atheist, but you don't have deen, in that proportion, you will feel down. You will feel insecure. You will feel you don't have a sense of belonging. So, the solution to this, right, more than going to a psychiatrist, the greatest solution is to have a sense of security that I have got deen, and deen is my pillar of support. For any given thing, I have to go back to deen. Any given situation, I must refer to deen again. Whatever deen requires of me, I must do it. So, as we have got that and we grow in that respect, we progress in that respect, in that regard, then you see now you're feeling strong, you feel secure, you feel strong, you feel confident of yourself, you don't feel like you're a lost case. So, this was about the first thing that Rasulullah was birthed in the Sahaba Kiram, and that was the aspect of yaqeen. See, if you look at the verses that were revealed in Makkah Mukarramah, then more of those verses were to build up the yaqeen in the hereafter. Right? He's talking about Jannat and Jahannam, right? More about yaqeen and more about Jannat and Jahannam. La uqsimu bi yawm al-qiyamah wa la uqsimu bin nafs al-lawwamah. وَالَّذِينَ آمُنُوا وَاتَّبَعَتُمْ ذُرِّيَّتُمْ بِإِمَانٍ أَلْحَقْنَا بِهِمْ ذُرِّيَّتَهُمْ. So, those verses that were revealed at the beginning, those verses were revealed to build one's iman. And the reason for that was, say for example, Allah Pak instructed them directly, leave out wine, leave out gambling, and perform namaz. Then the response could have been, why should we leave it out? Why must we leave it out? And how should we leave it out? Right. So the foundation wasn't laid. So the foundation of iman and yaqeen had to be laid first. Now the foundation of iman and yaqeen was laid. So their hearts are gripped with the fear of akhirat. Hazrat, we hear of Hazrat Mu'inuddin Chishti rahmatullah alayh, who was the forerunner of the Chishti movement, right? So, in this day and age, we like to take out everything, the essence of everything, the extract of everything. Oud, what is the extract of oud, right? And then you get this fresh juices that are sold in the shops, right? Then actually, the pulp is taken out, the whole extract is taken out, then it's diluted, then it's sold, right? Then you get rose essence. Everything, you want the essence of it. Then that essence is diluted into something and then it is sold, right? So, he explains what is the essence of this whole tasawuf. All the tasawuf we're doing, we must understand it and understand what's the goal, what we are heading towards. If we know what we are heading towards, then it makes the picture much more easy. Otherwise you're running and doing a lot of things, right? But we don't know what's the goal. Someone just heard about namaz, he started reading namaz. Then suddenly he heard about Durood Sharif, then he stopped onto Durood Sharif. Then he heard about Kalima La Ilaha, then from Durood Sharif he went on to Kalima. Then he heard that, then he heard no, Ikram is a lot of salab in Ikram, so he went to make Ikram. So what has happened to his deen, he's hopping from one end to the other end without a direction. So he must know what's the direction, what is the goal, what is the aim, what is required of him. Right. Right. The doctor may tell you that carrots are a very healthy food. Beetroot for building your blood, iron and all that is very good food. So now if someone leaves out every other food and only eats carrot or beetroot, what do you tell him? Huh? What do you say? You have to eat that and eat everything else in proportion. To enjoy a healthy body, everything has to be taken in proportion. But the doctor had to tell you that eat this carrots and beetroot or whatever else. He had to tell you because that's not part of your diet at all. So he's impressing upon you that that's the importance of you eating this. Not that you must leave out every other food and only eat and just be content with this. So he has to emphasize, impress. When you impress, then you impress someone. You impress on someone like that. Like how a child comes to madrasa. So, we tell him, you know what, if you don't know your Nahu, you're wasting time in the madrasa. You'd rather go out. You don't know Arabic grammar, then you are useless. Then the next ustad will be teaching fiqh, for example, right? And he will tell him, but you don't know fiqh, you know? Then you don't know nothing about deen. You don't know anything about deen. You are a pure waste. So now the one ustad is talking about Nahu, that you are a waste, and you know nothing, and the other is talking about fiqh. If you don't know how to speak, then you are wasting your time. So what they are doing is this, impressing upon you the importance of the subject. Not that you leave out fiqh or you leave out nahu. No, just the impressing upon you the importance of these different sciences. That this is very important, that teacher will tell you that is very important, so you do it as you're supposed to be doing it. So, Hazrat Mu'inuddin Chishti Rahmatullah, imagine he's a forerunner, right? And amongst the awliya in that zamana, he's ranked amongst the highest. Right. In one journey from Delhi to Calcutta, approximately 9 million people accepted Islam at his hands. One journey. So if you think they were not doing tabligh, we're wasting time. We're wasting time. You know, so you're wasting, so you're also wasting time. So they were after tabligh. The whole focus was to spread deen. But they had their own approach. Right? Different zamanas, you had a different approach. In the zamana of the Sahaba Ikram, one approach that was very efficient was jihad. Right? Today can you practice that? Most of us can't practice it. Our own weakness, whatever it is, but we can't practice it. So, the other group that is propagating deen in some other way, will we say to them that you are not propagating deen. You are propagating deen as well. But you are not doing it as the Sahaba Ikram, we are doing it. Why are you not doing it at that level? Because you don't have the energy, you don't have the capability. So you can't be comparing yourself at the Sahaba Ikram. Yes, you're doing, but at one level. Sahaba Ikram are doing it at the highest level. So you can't reach up to them. And the maxim is this, that مَا لَا يُدْرَكُ كُلُّهُ لَا يُتْرَكُ كُلُّهُ. What you can't achieve completely, then you don't leave out altogether. What you can't get altogether, then you don't leave it out altogether. You got mug and masoor, right? For iftar, for example. So you will not say, now, until I don't get chops, biryani, samosas, spring roll, half moon, full moon, I don't get all that, I'm not going to eat. You don't say that. So now, be happy with this today. One day, inshallah, you'll get that as well. Right? So, this has been designed according to the temperament of the people today. Right? So, they are doing some things, but they are doing things that are manageable for the people in this age. They're doing things that are manageable for the people in this age. Right? So, therefore, you'll find that some aspects of deen are left out. Like, you won't find jihad in it. Right? And you won't find nahi anil munkar. You won't find nahi anil munkar. Now, like you won't find the jamaat, someone is coming and giving a talk, and he's saying, "Now, you know, this is the beard, and you mustn't cut the beard before this." But he won't instruct the next person, "By, you know, your trousers are like this, and this is how the trousers are supposed to be." See? So they're not going to do nahi anil munkar. Why they're not going to do nahi anil munkar? Because they've seen what is the temperament of the people. And if you want to go this way, then people will not be able to join in. Because they don't have that type of yaqeen. They don't have that type of ability to accept. Some person came to Jamaat and said, you know, your father's estate is not winded up and you're eating incorrectly. You won't find that happening. Right? Or, "By, you know what, your shop is not right." So they can't talk about that. They'll just confine themselves with the 6 points. So some aspects of deen are going to be left out. It's not that they're willfully leaving it out. They're leaving it out looking at your temperament, that you don't have the heart to accept it. Right? Therefore, they will tell you indirectly that for all your deeni matters, you must refer to the ulama. Right? Masail, must refer to the ulama. And for your own piety, etc., you must refer to the mashayikh. They will tell you that also. It's in the package. So indirectly they told you, you must go and do it. But they can't come directly and tell you that this is right, this is wrong, this is haram, this is makruh, and this is makruh at-tahrim. They won't tell you that. And it's not because they are cutting anything out of deen. No. So this is, sometimes we misconstrue and misunderstand the whole thing. And when you misunderstand the whole thing, then we say, you know, that Nahi and Munkar is not part of Deen. Na'uzubillah. Because the Jamaat is not doing it, therefore you say it's not part of Deen. Whereas that is a Quranic instruction. Ta'amuruna bil ma'roof wa tanhawna anil munkar. Wa amur bil urf wa nha anil munkar. Right? So that's a part, it's part of the Deen. But just that because it is not manageable. Number one, it's not manageable. Number two, most people don't know how to do it. Right? Most people don't know how to do it. Right? In the words of Umar Palanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, if you want to give a general license for people to do it, then they'll go and stop one fitna and they'll bring up 10 fitnas. Now just imagine now, you saw one Muslim and Allah Ta'ala forbid, but he's got a bottle store. Right? One friend of mine was telling me, Basa man, he's telling me that he went to Bombay, you see. After his Jamaat, 4 months, he went to Bombay. So, he saw one shop written there, Basa Bottle Store. He went to a rage. Basa, what a bottle store. I'm going to fix him up. He told the taxi, but just stop here. I'm going to fix this person up. My connection, I'm going to fix him up. So, he went there. And he found that he was selling used bottles. So it's a different thing altogether. Right? In South Africa, when we say bottle store, we refer to something else, right? And in Bombay, when we say bottle store, you refer to something else. That's what we call urf in Arabic, and in English you call it usage. The usage is different here, the usage is different there. Right? So now, I give you a hypothetical situation. You saw one Muslim got a bottle store. Right? So the hadith is saying, فَلْيُغَيِّرْهُ بِيَدِي. Right? So you went into the bottle store, you took the bottles and started bashing and busting all those bottles, right? Acting in conformity with the hadith, right? Now, whatever the consequences are going to be, are you able to manage the consequences? You can't manage the consequence. You know what's going to happen, right? He's going to call the police, or he will fight with you, and he'll call his people, you'll call your people, there'll be a big jihad inside the shop there. Right? Won't there be problems? There'll be problems. Or for example, you went for gush, right? To someone's house you went. And he's got the music on, the television on, watching. All type of films he's watching there. You went there, you got your walking stick, and you went bash that thing. Broke it down. وَأْمُرْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَنْهَا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. Right. So you acted on the literal meaning of the hadith, on the exact meaning of the hadith. But what I'm saying, in the words of Maulana Panpuri Sahib Rahmatullah, you try to stop one fitna, but you will give way to 10 other fitnas. Right. So therefore, they say, no, you don't do it. Because the general run of the Jamaat, they won't know how to apply themselves. There may be one in a thousand who will know how to apply himself in a situation. I need to weed this out of this house or of this person, whatever else. I know how to do it, but I have some system. He won't go directly. He have to use some other methods, some other approaches to weed this thing out. So the general run of the Jamaat won't be able to do it. So they are asking him to do just that which they can manage. Understand? Now there's so much of intizam in the Sharia. There's so much of intizam, so much of understanding that is required before you apply yourself. It's not that you just take something and just apply yourself. You're going to understand it, you're going to see what it is all about, what's going to be the repercussion, what's going to be the consequence, how are you going to do it. That is why that article that we read yesterday, you know, that the reason why there isn't that type of swift progress nowadays is people don't have fanayat in your elders. Fanayat in your elders means that you don't have your own opinion. Your elders said that, just move along. Then don't ask who, why, when, whatever. Don't ask that. Now, that's a general problem everywhere. Everywhere. Right throughout, right across. It's a problem. Yeah. Now, if the Muslims, at least say 50% of the Muslims, had that fanayat, we would have been at a different level. whether in the madrasa, whether in the khanqa, whether in the jamaat. But if we had that fanayat, we would have been at a different level. If the jamaat, for example, said there is a takaza that this 10 brothers must go to London, right? Or they must go to Australia. Now they're eager because they know it's soft grounds, right? Easy grounds, soft grounds, South African style, all comforts you will get. Suddenly they had a change of mind. And they said, no, you don't go to Australia, nor should you go to Canada and London. You're going to work in Malawi. No roads there, nothing, you're going to work there. Pitch up your old tents and go and work. Now, you've got to see the response of the person. If there's going to be a high level of fanaiyat, you know, my elder said this, I must do it. Come what may, I must do it. So, this is not something that is just confined to one group. It's a problem that's across the board. We don't have that. And therefore, because we don't have that level of fanaiyat, just to accept, just to, in other words, to surrender our intentions, our desires into the intention of the elder. He said this, let's go with it. We don't have any qualms about it. We don't have any reservations about it. You must just do it. Now you see that your deen is at a different level. Right. So what I was getting at the beginning, the type of verses that were revealed, with types of verses pertaining to hereafter, Jannat, Jahannam, Akhirat, Qiyamat, وَلِمَنْ خَافَ مَقَامَ رَبِّي جَنَّتَانْ فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانْ etc. These were the type of verses that were revealed. Until they got established and rooted in their yaqeen. When they got established and rooted in the yaqeen, now wine is haram. So that came out the third or the fourth year of the Hijrat. Came to Medina Munawwara, 13 years here, another 4 years, 3-4 years here. 16, 17 years later, then the prohibition came. Right? Same with usury and interest, right? Man has accepted Islam now, time, interest. It's haram, there's no two ways about it. But now he's got no yaqeen, no background, no yaqeen, no basis he's got, no base he's got, right? So you have to develop that yaqeen. So how you develop the yaqeen? You say, alright, you're an adult. As you're an adult, then you need to spend some time. So now, where must I go and spend the time? The only thing that is available for you now is go out in jamaat. So you'll go out in jamaat and you'll build up that yaqeen. They'll teach you about iman yaqeen, iman and yaqeen. You'll get this sawab for this, that sawab for that, whatever. It builds up your yaqeen. When it builds up your yaqeen now they tell you, alright, wine is haram. Now he left the bottle store. Try music is haram, he left all his guitar and musical instruments, he left everything, right? You told him your womanizing is all haram, so he left all that. But straight you told him all that, now he doesn't have any base, he doesn't have any foundation. He doesn't have that type of heart to leave it out straight away. So you worked on that level. See? This is an explanation given by Hazrat Aisha radiallahu anha, Bukhari Sharif. Anyway, I was speaking to you about Mu'inuddin Chishti rahmatullahi alayhi. In one travel, one journey of his, 9 million people accepted Islam. Now in the 9 million, you can imagine, like in Jamaat for example, one person came right, then he can be a means of at least another 10-20 people coming right, because his wife, his children, people that he has some influence over, he can speak to them as well. So now, that 9 million is not just 9 million. Like you say, you know, we got 100 people working for us, right? So each person is representing a family. 10 people, 5 people, 6 people. So he's representing so much. That one person is supporting and taking care of so many other people. Right? So you can imagine now what type of deen, what type of khidmat he must have done. Then in that 9 million that he converted to Islam, how many ulama must have been born? How many huffaz must have been born? Right? How many muftiyan kiram must have been born? How many muhaddisin must have been born? So all this is to his credit. But this was that form of tabligh. Right? So Allah Ta'ala inspired the hearts of these people in the respective ages to do that form of tabligh. You go and do tabligh and do it in this way. At this place, at this time, you will do tabligh in this way. In another zamana, then Allah Pak inspired the hearts in a different way. A simple illustration to understand this, Hazrat Muhammad Thami Sahib Rahmatullahi, right, he was about 20 years elder than Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi, right? So he had noticed that there was some type of a weakness in the ummah. So what he saw, that the Muslim woman was far backwards in deen. They were doing all wrong things. Their customs and their ways and all that was all off. Now there's a wedding, for example, right? There's a wedding and the bride has to just sit there. Now the Zohar time is going, Asr time is going, Maghrib time is going, Isha time is going, and no namaz are being performed. So there were some terrible customs that were being practiced at that time. Like when we were small, I remember now, there used to be these hall weddings, you know. Hall weddings, and then the bride has to sit on the stage. And I should think at that time, I was about 7-8 years of age, I used to think, hey, this marriage is a terrible azab, man. Because I used to think, in my little mind, I should think, oh, that woman has to sit on the stage, on that stool, now, one posture. She can't turn right, can't turn left, she can't go for a walk, she can't scratch anywhere. So isn't that an azab? Okay, I used to be afraid of that. Okay, this is a terrible azab, this man. So Maulana saw this. He seen the wrong in his zamana, right? When he saw the wrong in his zamana, then he looked for a way to fix the wrong. See, today what happens? We see a wrong, right? With the ulama, non-ulama, then there's an emotional outburst. Hey, but do this. They're doing this. Shias are doing this. Qadianis are doing this. You make a big noise, right? But when it comes to rolling the sleeves and doing work, then they say, hey, no, I'm too busy today. I'm caught up with something. I got this appointment here, that commitment I got. So nobody is prepared to do work. But for an emotional outburst, we are very good for that. So you don't get anything out of it. Emotional outburst and just calling a big, huge meeting, right, you don't get anything out of it. You have to roll up your sleeves and do some work. So these former ulama, that's what they did. Mu'a saw that this was the problem. First he has to put the finger on the pulse and see what's the problem. So he prepared kitabs like Best Is Ever. Says that this one here, if every household has got this, then at least, you know, a good amount of all the bidat will go out. They'll have a direction in life, what they must do at a wedding, at an engagement, how should they perform their namaz, what is who you should be observing parda from, what is talaq, what is marriage, what is divorce, and what is what will amount to a corrupt type of a sale, and what will make that haram, that contract of yours, what will make it haram, what will make it halal. So he outlined all that, gave them a direction. So his zamana, he saw, and Allah Pak inspired his heart, that this is the need of the time. So he prepared one kitab. So if anybody reads the kitab from cover to cover, you know, more especially the Urdu one, if you can't, then at least the English one, right? Then at least he will have a good understanding, a sound understanding of deen. Then to maybe some finer aspects, he'll have to refer to ulama, okay, this is what I read, and what is meant by this. Because you can't take a chance. When you're reading the kitab, there's a 1% doubt also, then don't go with that doubt. You don't go with that doubt. Like you see, you talk of photography, you talk of many other issues, say no, ulama may be permissible. Now the dini principle is, fastan zihu ani shubahat. Nabi Sassan says, what? That refrain from doubts. So now you're hearing on one side, some ulama say it's not permissible, some say it's permissible. So is this a doubtful area or not? So what is Nabi Sassan's instruction? You went for your own convenience, but what was Nabi Sassan's instruction? He said, now leave out the doubtful area. He said, just leave it out. So leave it out. Karas. You stop there. You don't say, now there's a way we can make it happen and all that. Then you're falling into a shubha. Because Nabi Sam told you, don't go into shubha, but you go into shubha. Okay. Right? So if you've got a small doubt about any deen issue, then you refer it. Small, even if it's a 0.5%. You don't try and guesswork. Don't try and make up your own answers. you try and find out exactly from reputable an alim also who's conversed with the kitabs. Sometimes you got an alim, but he's doing something else. He's in business or something else. So he's not so much in touch and in line with his kitabs. So someone that is in line with his kitab, he's got a good munasabah and understanding with kitabs, we refer to him. Right? Al-Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi was initially in Sahanpur, based in Sahanpur. Right? And these people, they worked for people across the board, whether it was the villager, it was the ignorant, it was the learned, it was the educated, it was the affluent, the poor, across the board. So he used to have a session on a Friday, and people used to come to him from the village, they should come and refer to him. Right? Mawlana Sayyid Khan Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, this is how he got linked up to Jamaat. Because he used to come to Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi initially in Sahanpur. He was from Mahalla Afghan. And he used to come on a Friday. And Mufti Sahib gradually brought him up. And something just struck and he joined up. Right? So, now in that session, these villagers, educated, non-educated, learned, not learned, all types of people are coming in. So, one villager came up and told Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, you know, why is this ulama doing all haram? They're all involved in haram. I said, what haram are they involved in? So, you know, they're eating pan. And eating pan is haram. So I said, where you got that from? So I got it from Basi Zabar. So when I got Basi Zabar, I didn't see anywhere that eating of pan is haram. Where did you get that from? So when I got in my Basi Zabar. So all right, next week when you're coming on a Friday, you come and show me that this is the page and this is the reference that he got his kitab. So it was written there ke aurat jab iddat mein baithti hai aur sog manati hai to usko apne muh ko rangeen karna paan ke saath jaiz nahi. So that was what was written there, that when a woman is in iddat, you know, when her husband has passed away, so she has to sit at home for a waiting period. In that waiting period, she can't use any type of ornaments, anything that will make her feel, any type of makeup she can't use. Right? Right? Like she can't use lipstick. So when the person eats pan, right, so the mouth also becomes colored, the lips become colored, the tongue also becomes colored, the person becomes a little bit more attractive, right? So because it's an attraction, so therefore, it's not permissible to eat when the woman is in iddat. So, when Mufti Sahib read that whole thing, he said, kya tu ne sab ulama ko iddat mein bitha diya kya? So now, it's a misunderstanding, right? But you're giving the people a chance, right? I got a session, you come here, and you clear up your doubts. So I say, we don't speculate in this respect. We don't speculate, don't guesswork. The radio can't be a teacher, it can't be an instructor. The television can't be an instructor. If that was the way of instruction, then Allah would have told the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam to do it through that means. But deen passes from person to person. Man to man, man heart to heart, person to person. So this is how deen spreads. And these things are not ways for deen to spread. Right? For some remote person sitting in some jungle, maybe he got some guidance through one radio program. Now you don't make that argument, or, hey, that man, he got hidayat because of the radio. Right. Now he didn't have an access to come to any program as such. So the only thing that was available for him was this. That's a different thing. But generally that is not the way that hidayat spreads. Hidayat from person to person, man to man, heart to heart, this is how hidayat spreads. Coming back to the topic, I said, you know, we talk about the ithar, you know, the essence. What is the very essence of this whole tasawuf movement? Right. I won't say tasawuf movement, but tasawuf obligation. Like tabliq is an obligation, tasawuf is an obligation, ta'lim is an obligation. So, what is the whole essence of it? Right. If we know the essence, then we know the goal. If we know the goal, then we know what to aim for. Right. Right. So he says it's just three things. One is to build up raja. Right. Raja is hope. Right, anticipation, right, expectation, right, and that anticipation must be at a very high level. So the Shaykh Ahmad Sa'id's kitab, Fazail Amal, is all based on Raja. Right, Okay, you'll do this, then you'll get this amount of sawab. You'll do this, you'll get that amount of sawab. So the raja can only come in if the yaqeen is right. If the yaqeen is not right, can you have raja? Can you have hope? Can you have that level of expectation? So in other words, what Hazrat Mu'inuddin Chishti Rahmatullah is saying, that after yaqeen, then the first thing that you need to build is the hope. That you'll do this and you'll get this sawab. You'll do that and you'll get that sawab. Right? So that's raja, hope. Right? You hope, you expect from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that this is what Allah Pak will give you. And that hope must be at a very high level. That Allah Pak will make it happen. He'll make it. If I'm going to read the namaz with jama'at, then this is the amount of sawab I'm going to get. Right? I'm going to practice the sunnah, then this is the sawab I will get. So that raja and that hope in Allah Ta'ala must be at a very high level, very high pitch, very high level. So that's the first thing. So that will encourage you to do all the faras, sunnat, mustahab, everything deen, right? See the ether of tasawuf. The raja, what will make you do? Everything, all the obligations, the sunnats, the wajib of deen, now you're going to carry it out because of raja. There is such a power in you, you know, it's such a movement in you, within you, it's such an enthusiasm, a force, that it will leave you restless until you do it. You know, it's a force within you. It's so active force that it will leave you restless. Like, you know, you want to go and sleep, but you got pisap or something, holding up. Now you can you sleep? It's tight. So until I don't get this done, then my mind is not settled. Right? Or someone he's got an addiction of looking at the papers. Now, if he doesn't read the paper, then his food won't digest. He must look at the paper. Right? He must look at the news. Whatever happens, at least that ma'mool is such an important ma'mool that at least 10 minutes before he sleeps, he must complete that ma'mool. Right? No matter what happens. Right? So the raja is at such a high pitch that every obligation, every duty, every faras, sunnat, wajib, mustahab, everything is carried out. The raja is so great, right? Our problem is we've got the raja at the wrong place. The hopes are in the wrong place. The hopes are in things and people, right? Now I will connect with this person and he will do this for me. Or I will connect with that thing and that thing will work for me. I got this investment, it will work for me. And I'm connected to this person here, so he will work out this for me. So our hopes, we got hopes, but in the wrong things. So Allah wants us to have hopes, but in the right things. Have hopes in His Zat. Because that thing or that person is a creation. And the creation must collapse at some point or the other. You have a bank, you have an insurance, you have a medical aid, whatever. At some point, it must collapse, it must fail. Right? Don't you hear that collapsing, failing, banking, whatever? So that must fail because it's creation. Against that, we have the hope and we have the trust in Allah Ta'ala, that He will make it happen. So He can't collapse. Can time change Allah Ta'ala? Nauzubillah. He can't. He's unchangeable. He can't. He is like He was. So there's nothing that can change Allah Ta'ala. So that's why we say in our dua, ya, was it munqizal halka? Before that, azim al-raja. Ya azim al-raja. We have the greatest hope in you, azim al-raja, the greatest hope we have in you, O Allah Ta'ala. Everything else can fail us. Everything else can disappoint us, can betray us. But you, it's impossible, you can't betray. You can't collapse, you can't fall. Nothing can drop you. Ya azim al-raja. So that hope in Allah Ta'ala must come to a very high level. That He will make it happen. And when we have that level of hope, then every work of Allah Ta'ala will be done, because the hope is in Him. So we know that we'll have to press that button to get that end, right? We have to press that button. You want to get there, then you have to press this button. You have to go that route. So that's the first essence in tasawuf, right? The second essence in tasawuf is khawf. Right? Now you've got the motivation to do the good, because that's the raja, right? You've got the motivation. Do this, don't do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, you're doing it. Right? Qurbani comes, time comes, see, you know. Now you've got the motivation. You heard the bayan now, and Mullah told in the bayan that, you know, سَمِّنُوا دَحَايَاكُمْ فَإِنَّهَا عَلَى السِّرَاطِ مَطَايَاكُمْ. Okay, you better fatten your animal, because that will be your conveyance on the Pulsirat. You heard that hadith. Now you went and look for the best animal. And you heard the other hadith also, that you know, when you are buying and selling, then be an easy buyer, be an easy seller. Let the seller also be happy and comfortable. No, mashallah, I made a profit with this person. He's not a difficult person. He doesn't skin me to the bones, you know. And Mawla Ismail Abdul Razak was saying that we have our shop's name, Caesar Bantu. It's not Caesar Bantu, it's Shlinza Bantu. Huh? Shlinza. What do you mean of Shlinza? Skinny, yeah, skinny the people. So that Caesar Bantu is misleading. So yeah, you got that hadith as well. You got buy it, and then when you are doing the transaction, you're a happy buyer, he's a happy seller, he's happy, mashallah, I got a good deal. And you're happy also, I got a good profit. So you got all those hadiths before you. So you see that raja way it will take you, right? Then you got the khawf. So you have to have that fear also at a very high pitch, very high level. It's not only with your eyes, not only with your ears, not only with your mouth, even your heart. You know, yesterday I was thinking that anger, what can it do to a person, right? Now you're angry about someone, right? You're angry about someone. So either you won't hurt the person, right, physically. فَلْيُغَيِّرْهُ بِيَدِي. First you go and change him. Loosen him a little bit, right? And if you can't, then فَبِلِسَانِي. Then with the tongue you give it to him. Tongue lashing. Because physically you can't do anything. So the second level, فَبِلِسَانِي. Then you go and give him a tongue lashing. And if you can't even do that, then فَبِقَلْبِي. Then in your heart you got malice for the person. You got malice for that person. No, this person here is like this. He's got a very big business. Yeah, he's drugging. I know he's getting money. All backdoor he's getting. He's stolen stuff he's selling. So, malice. Right? So the malice will come off in different ways. Not in one way only. It will come in different ways. Like I got something against Mulana Ruwait, for example, right? I got something against him. So when I got something against him now, I can't do him anything physically, I can't do anything to him verbally. So I will do something from the mind, from the heart. So what I will do is now, there was an opportunity here now, he made a mistake. Now I'm hoping for him to make a mistake, and then for people to rejoice at his failure. Yeah, you see this person here now, see, you know, I made sabr now, you see Allah got him now, you see. As though kisi ki jaan gayi aur teri ada rahi. That person died, he got hurt, but now it's an occasion for you to rejoice. You see, you are waiting for this situation that this type of a situation to come up, okay, where he falls down, and then you will rejoice over it, you see. So what type of a sin was that? That was a sin connected to your heart, to your mind. So when you got that fear at that high level, at a very high pitch, then you will like for him what you like for yourself. فَلْيُحِبَّ لِأَخِي مَا يُحِبُّ لِي. Right? Like for example now, you are a Mawlana, right? And Alhamdulillah, people are getting impressed with your talks. Just for example, Julia is giving a very good talk now. So now he must have it in his heart. All other ulama that are giving talks also, Allah gives the better crowds. And let people get more affected in their talks than my talk. Allah give us all success, but give them even more than what you give me. So now you say, no, see, he's got that khawf at a very high level. Because of that khawf is pressing him to make this type of a dua. Otherwise, what will happen if he doesn't have that khawf at that level, then what will happen? When he sees other people's success, then he'll start burning. Hey, this person is attracting a crowd. And I'm not attracting a crowd. I don't know what they're doing. What they're doing, some tawis here. Some wazifa they got. And that wazifa is making everything happen here. Some tawis, some jadu they're doing. And that's what's attracting the people. Yeah. So, your mind will go in all wrong things against that person. See? But you've got that khawf at a very high level, at a very high pitch now. So, no, hey, Nabi Sam doesn't want us to have any dirt in the heart. Because he's saying that in 2 days in the week, duas and all get accepted, forgiveness is announced. And a person who's got malice and all that in his heart, Then he's suspended, he's left out. You know, no forgiveness for you, you stay aside. Everybody else, they are winning, but you stay aside. Right. So I can't afford to have any malice against anybody. So this is the second essence. You know, you're talking about essence. This is one essence. This is the second essence. Samajhe moram tiyasa. Now, what is the third essence? You see, these people, they were brains. They were brains, they were geniuses. Allah inspired their hearts. Like I was telling you, Tanwir Ahmad Sahib, he saw that problem in his zamana. He saw a problem in his zamana. So he fixed the ummah in one way. So now that kitab became a very, very wide circulated kitab. Then, Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, it was his zamana, he foreseen another problem. Right. Or say Hazrat Shaykh Rahmatullah, he saw another problem amongst the ummah. Right. That now with the tabligh movement, people will come into deen, right? But what will be the biggest impediment in deen? What will be the biggest impediment, whether in deen, whether getting the deen completely, or whether getting the deen in general, one is complete, one is just getting deen. But what is going to be the biggest impediment? So Allah Pak must have inspired his heart as well. Right? That there will be two problems here. One is either they don't have the desire to do deen, you know, they don't have the motivation. They don't have the motivation, they don't have the drive. So he inspired him to write the kitab Fazail Amal. So they don't have the desire, the enthusiasm is all dead. There's no enthusiasm, there's no motivation, there's nothing. So now to motivate them, to make them enthusiastic. Right. So he wrote the kitab Fazail Amal. Right. So that's enthusiastic. Then, now what is the biggest impediment on the part of deen? So Allah Pak inspired him again. You see, you need to do and to refrain. You have in deen do's and don'ts. Right. So the greatest impediment will be hubbud dunya. Right? As the hadith says, karahiyatul maut wa hubbud dunya. Right? That's the last problem in this ummah. Hubbud dunya, karahiyatul maut. So that will be the last problem. So for that, Allah Ta'ala inspired his heart, go and write Fazail al-Sadaqat. At the more time of that, Allah Ta'ala inspired his heart differently. His heart, Allah Ta'ala inspired differently. Because this is the problem for the ummah. So you see what we read in the morning, dunya. So, this is going to be the impediment. You got that out of the way, then the road is clear. And you don't have that, then the road is very foggy, misty, you can't see well. But now you got that out of the way, right? So now you can cover distance, you can have speed, you can do everything. Right? So these akabir, Allah Pak inspired the hearts. They weren't like us, like we see some problem, we just make a noise and finish. They said, no, we must do something. Do something constructive. Start it off. Write some kitab. Motivate. Talk to someone. Get down to doing some work. Not just an emotional outburst and finish. In emotional outburst, what happens is you appease yourself. Yeah, you know, I spoke to them, I gave it to them. Then what happened after that? Was there any follow-up after that? You converted so much. Is there any follow-up after that? You worked on them, brought them, taught them about the elementary things, secondary things of Islam, or you just left them? So now there's a follow-up. It's a whole process. It's a whole process that is required in place. You know, one person is initiating, one is following it up. Then that thing runs. But you just initiate it and there's nobody to follow it up then. Like you open up a big shop, right, 100 million then. You open up one big mall, you open up. Every department you got. But nobody to manage those stores. What's going to happen? You have to close the thing. So same, one is going to initiate. So this Pedal Jamaat, they go and initiate. A lot of places where there's no deen, they go and initiate. But then another group has to come in and follow it up. Jamaat, Maktab, whatever. They have to go and follow it up. Alright, these people, from nowhere they got them somewhere. So we respect them, the Pedal Jamaat, from nowhere they got them somewhere. Right? We mustn't run them down. Sprinkling the water running away. No, they say, alright, they got them somewhere at least. It gave them some realization, some consciousness, some awareness. See, we compliment, we respect each other. This is something we couldn't have done. But now what must we do? We must follow it up. What they did now, they got them at a certain level, now we must respect them, compliment them, and then follow it up. They did one thing, we do a second thing. Don't you see? when there's a jalsa or istima, everybody doesn't become Maulana Qahtani giving talks there. Maulana Qahtani got one job, he's giving talks. They got a tashkil tent, they're doing something. But if it wasn't for that person that is peeling the potato, I asked Maulana Qahtani, could he give him his talk? He can't give his talk. If it wasn't that kitchen person, he wouldn't have been able to perform as well. So everybody's got some work. So if everybody respects, one respects the other, right? When the sawab is coming, Allah will say there's a joint effort to get an equal sawab. The cook or Maulana Qahtani, both are getting an equal sawab because it was a joint effort, the ikhlas was there, and everybody was putting his shoulder to the wheel. So all you people, I throw you up in sawab. So that was when you compliment, when you respect. See, the importance of ikram and Muslim. Compliment, respect, make dua from the heart. Not just surface. So that's the second ether, second essence of tasawuf. Now, I'll just stop for 5 seconds. Let's see if anybody can guess what's the third essence. You got a third need in deen, right? In your life, in your whole life, in the superstructure of life, right? There's another need. Huh? In the superstructure of life, alright, I'll give you 5,000 if anybody can guess. That's on, right? Anybody can guess it. Is it? Mahabbat, he's got it. I'm owing you 5,000. The third is Mahabbat, alright. What is the link? What is the link? Why Mahabbat? Ji? Ji? Yes, sir.
How much for that fish?
Ji? What is that?
How much money you need for
that fish? How much for that fish?
Oh. That's part of the answers, right? The reason for Mohabbat is that when you come to this planet Earth, right, there must be some trial. There must be. Anybody sitting here can say that there's no challenge in life. There must be some challenge. Now you got married, there was a challenge. You got a child, there was a challenge. In business, there's a challenge. To send your child to the madrasa is a challenge. To send him to school is a challenge. So there is difficulties right through. Right? You're studying, there's a challenge. Examination is a challenge. See? Right? You need to buy something, it's a challenge. You need to pull out money from your pocket. Right? It's a challenge. Right? So you have these difficulties. You have all these difficulties. You have all these hurdles. And to get up for Fajr Namaz is a challenge. Isn't it a challenge? Nice, cozy, and winter, and then leave everything and go to the masjid, right? So it's a challenge. So if the muhabbat is at a very high level, at a very high level, muhabbat for Allah Ta'ala, and muhabbat for Rasulullah SAW is at a very high level, then to break those millions of containers of beer and wine was easy, simple. Kullu musibatin ba'daka jalalu. Isn't that? Kullu musibatin ba'daka jalalu. That woman said, you know, when she came to the field of jihad and she saw husband passed away, it's all right. Brother passed away, all right. Father passed away. But where is Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam? So he saw Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and he said, "Kullu musibatin ba'daka jalalu." Every musibat, every trial is insignificant after I've seen you. I've seen you, I've seen everything. So that muhabbat and that love must be at such a pitch, at such a level. You saw him, you got everything. As though it's not a big thing. Someone gave you one smack, right? And then he gave you 10,000 rands. Right? So that muhabbat for that 10,000 will be so much, say, what? Every 2 hours, he must give me something. Right? Because that muhabbat, you got that affinity. This is one shot and 10 grand I got. So quickly I can just build up. So that muhabbat will thereafter, it will motivate you. If you don't have that muhabbat, then it's a difficult thing. Now then it's like pushing a car, you know. You go to Spingo Hills, I have to push. Right through you pushing the car, say, by madness, by get the fuel and let it be self-steamed, let it be self-powered, that it can move on its own steam. So that muhabbat is like the steam in that vehicle. Without that muhabbat, there is no steam in that vehicle. You are pushing it again. Oh, you heard that fazail, then you got to try it again. 1-2 days again, you punch it. Again, you have to hear it. Again, you. It's a borrowed strength. So now, bring that muhabbat into your system. That anything and everything becomes so easy. Right. Now they say, hey, gush day today. Hey, but now today there's a dry on, man. But that muhabbat for the sunnah is at such a high pitch. Hey, 100 brays, forget it. There's no taste. Without that gush, there's no taste. So that muhabbat is at such a high pitch, at such a high level, that everything can be put aside. Everything can be put aside, brushed aside. So the muhabbat is at such a level. Right. So he says that this is the very, very ether, the very essence, the very extract of the soul. I ask you, is there anything left of deen? Is there anything that's left? Because you need that. You know, you're going to get the trials, you're going to get the challenge in this world. Someone died. Right. Now, if you don't have that muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala at a very high pitch, can you take it easily? You can't take it. How it happened, why it happened, only to me, everybody else got children, why his child didn't go, why my child went away. Then you will be looking at it in the spirit of love, in muhabbat. When you look at it in the spirit of love, you see, you know, like as though there was a big buzrug here, right? Or there was a king here, right? Say, King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, right? And there were 10 people, and he asked for 1 glass of water, right? And 10 people got the water, and he took your water. What will happen? You'll dance with joy, right? Won't you do that? See, now I can qualify for a Saudi Arabian passport also. Yeah. So you know, right? You become so happy. Right? So exactly the same when you got that muhabbat, when you got that muhabbat and you got that love at that level, right? Now, if your child passed away, then you see, thousands of people have got children, but Allah Pak accepted my gift. He accepted my gift. He didn't accept them. So that, if you got muhabbat, if there's a tragedy, then you say the same, you know. Because Allah, it belonged to Allah Ta'ala, that wealth, or the child, or whatever. It belonged to him, and it went back to him. Whether it was your person, whether it was your wealth, whether it was your child, right? You had any type of problem within your person, within your wealth, within your children. From so many people, Allah Pak accepted me. This sickness, this calamity came. So Allah Pak likes me. There is a muhabbat that's going on. Right. Now, just relate one incident to understand you, make you understand what is muhabbat all about. Leela Majnoon. Normally when they talk about muhabbat, they must support you with Leela Majnoon, right? So because it's more clear, so you'll get a better picture. So Leela must have been Ramadan sometimes. So she was giving Halim, you see. She must have made a vow, whatever. She's giving Halim. So all the lines, all are queued up. All are queued up. So Majnoon is thinking to himself, hey, there's a chance now. I got a different agenda. They got different agendas, but I got a different agenda. All I have to do is just take my Halim bow and go and stand in the queue. So she's feeding Halim for everybody. As Majnoon came in, right? Now in the olden days, they were using this mud pots, you know, it's clay pots. So as Majnoon came through, she took the pot and she burst it. Right? Now this Majnoon began to dance with joy. He couldn't contain his happiness. He thinks, no, our love is already endorsed. Our relationship is not a Halim relationship. You see that? Zara muhabbat ko lao, bhai. Bring some flavor, just flavor the relationship with muhabbat. With the absence of muhabbat, you can't understand things. And when it's muhabbat, then it will shift mountains from its places. When it's supported with muhabbat, with love. Now we have got muhabbat, but the muhabbat is all material. Anything that is material, our heart is connected to that. Right? The muhabbat is for that. We aspire, we work, we struggle, everything for material. Now just divert that into Allah Ta'ala, muhabbat. Just bring that, just enhance that, just progress and see then what muhabbat will get you. What it will do for you. Allah Pak tawfiq naseeb kare.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. So today we'll discuss some of the etiquettes of sitting in a majlis or sitting and listening to a bayan. But firstly, we should correct our intentions when sitting, that the purpose being that we will learn and thereafter practice on whatever we have heard. Then when sitting, one should sit with respect and adab. And then you should listen attentively to whatever the speaker is saying. That one shouldn't be sitting there and busy with the tasbih while the speaker is addressing the crowd. But rather, total attention and focus should be towards the speaker. That the ears should be listening to what the speaker is saying. And there should also be eye focus and eye contact. That the person is looking at the speaker as well. Then, when sitting for the in the audience, then one should sit as close as possible to the speaker. That if there is, for example, they're sitting in different rows, then if there is place still in the first row, then one shouldn't sit in the second row and allow someone's back to be facing yourself, but rather fill the first row and thereafter so forth and so on, the second row and then the third row. Then if you are unclear with regards to any aspect that has been discussed, then upon the termination of that sitting, immediately clarify it and don't allow any doubt to linger in the mind, because at times this can be dangerous and this can be disastrous. Then if there are any lessons that are gained, then one should try to immediately implement it and practice upon it. One shouldn't wait for an opportunity for some time later to pass on and thereafter think of practicing. But as soon as a person gets an opportunity to practice, then immediately it should be practiced. Then in that gathering, when the name of Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam is taken, then the first time that the name of Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam is taken, then it is wajib to send salawat upon Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and thereafter every other time it will be preferable and sunnah to send durood. So one should take cognizance of this fact that the first time that the name of Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam is taken, then durood should be recited. And upon the completion of any gathering, any majlis, whether it is a bayan, whether it is some discussion, then one should recite the tasbih, Subhana Rabbika Rabbil Izzati Amma Yasifun, or Subhanallahi wa bihamdihi, Subhanakallahumma bihamdik, Nashhadu an la ilaha illa ant, Nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk.